Om Shri Sai Ram. Dear listeners, the time now in our studios is 12:31 and it's time for our afternoon satsang, and as it happens every week from our studios in Radio Sai, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind from Team Radio Sai, and we are joining you for this week's afternoon satsang. Welcome, Arvind.
Thank you, Prem. Sai Ram. Sai Ram to all our listeners and fellow participants in this satsang. As always, we begin by placing our most humble and loving pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan. Prem, the summer has begun in Puttaparthi, and you know, it almost feels as if there's some switch that God puts on, you know, that it is summertime, and till about 5-6 days back, it used to get cold at night. You know, I remember in the middle of the night, sometime at around 2 a.m. or 3 a.m., I would wake up and put off, reduce the fan speed because it used to get cold. But suddenly it looks like from 2 days back, God has turned on the switch and it is summer. It's blazing hot. Cannot walk in the ashram without slippers. Wow, it really feels as if there's a switch that brings on the seasons. Well, yeah, summertime.
Typically, you know, it's always said in Prashanti Nilayam, the moment Shivratri is over, I mean, it's the signal for summer to step in, and it's almost like that. Ever since Shivratri just got over, I think the heat is just catching on.
Exactly. And it brings back so many memories of how at this time, you know, Swami's concern, he would actually move over either to Vrindavan or Kodaikanal, not because it's hot for him. He has endured great discomfort, and I remember even in the summer, you were saying how Swami would give interviews in that small interview room with right. So many people where there was no air conditioner, there was no air cooler there.
And if you recollect, this is the season for even the 12th class boys passing out. Swami used to call them and speak to them, and this is the time when Swami would call the graduating batches and speak to them, and they would be classes of about 50-60 people. In that small interview room, Swami would spend close to an hour and a half
exactly. Talking
to those boys.
And it was out of concern for devotees and everybody that Swami would shift the venue to a cooler Bangalore or even Kodaikanal so that the devotees would be at comfort. Always for Swami, take it anything, even when it came to putting the gold, rather than, you know, in every temple we see that the Sanctum Sanctorum has all the gold and all the, you know, the precious, it's so magnificent, and the devotee sitting area is normal, but in Prashanti Nilayam even that is opposite. The shrine is normal and the devotee seating area has got gold all above. I mean, Swami has always done for devotees. These are all symbols to show. And that's why the timings also would be shifted, you know. Darshan would be shifted by about half an hour to 45 minutes later. Bhajans would be shifted so that the devotees are not subjected to the extreme heat.
I remember, you know, in 2001, Swami was in Vrindavan during December. I think after many years, Swami was spending a December, that is the winter in Vrindavan.
Correct.
And remember, the first day Swami was coming out for Darshan, Swami stepped out of Trai, and you know the setting there, all the marble flooring and all that.
You'd be very chill.
The moment Swami stepped onto that marble flooring, Swami just literally jumped back one step. Swami said, "Enta challaga undi, it's so cold." And the next thought was, my God, it is so cold at 7:30 in the morning. The devotees would have assembled at 4:30 in the morning. And immediately Swami called Narasimhamurthy sir and said, today after bhajans make an announcement that darshan will be only after 8:30 and nobody should come and assemble before 6 o'clock.
Whenever the weather gets very hot, Swami is like a cool breeze. And whenever it gets very cold, he's like a warm flame. He's always been that way. And I think in order to remind ourselves of that this practice has been kept alive from today onwards, for those who are not yet aware, the mandir timings, the evening Vedam chanting and the bhajans have been shifted by half an hour, because around this time of the year, every year, Swami would shift the evening bhajans and evening session by about half an hour later. In many countries, we have the DST, the daylight saving time.
Right.
Here too, it is DST, but it's devotee saving time. You know, because when you go and sit on that kadapa floor, right. Especially the students' area, you know, we used to be
right under the roof,
the glass roof, which acts like a lens and heats up, and you sit and we get our rares fried, roasted, toasted. So the timings have been shifted from today evening onwards. The Veda chanting will begin half an hour later, And the bhajans too will begin half an hour later. So,
right. So it's 5 in the evening, the Vedam starts, till 5:45 when the bhajans will start and
conclude at 6:30
Aarti.
So, dear listeners, that are the revised timings and
That also actually pushes for some change in the Thursday live schedule, because the Vedam tutor which we used to have at 6:15 we are now advancing it to at 4:15. So 4:15 to 4:45 will be the Vedam tutor, after which we'll take you to Sai Kulanthal for the live broadcast. And when you return back to the studios of Radio Sai, we will have the Bhajan tutor. Vish will be here for that.
And I think the schedule will carry on till almost June when the summer ends.
Till the summer ends.
And it feels so happy for this change, because this is another small way in which, you know, we can remember the wonderful love and thoughtfulness that Swami always had and always has for his devotees. He has, and that is why it still reflects today. So that's about it. Now we move on to the topic of today's discussion, the three R's.
Yeah, three zeros the last time, the three R's this time. Something with the threes.
Something is there with the threes. Anyway, the traditionally, you know, there have been the three R's of learning.
Right.
It is said that reading, writing and arithmetic. Without any of these, nobody can be said to be educated. For education to be complete, one must know how to read, one must know how to write, and one must know arithmetic. And that's why, I don't know why they called it the three R's, because writing and arithmetic begin with W and A respectively.
I think
it may be the phonetic.
Right, and you know, the coming generations might lose out one R. I think
the
writing is almost fading out, you know. It's being replaced by typing or texting or whatever it is.
Yes, and the language, whether it is the social networking sites or whether it's an SMS, whether it's even emails, all the rules of grammar, punctuation, spellings, they're all, I mean, I can say, not even gone to the dogs, they've gone worse. Because it has come to such a level that, you know, when I write mails or when I write, compose messages, somehow I've still not gotten this text language or SMS language or the modern language. I type it out elaborately in perfect grammar, you know, capitalizing the first letter of the sentence, using the commas where they need to be used, getting the spellings right. And many people, you know, they just find it very funny. They find it strange. They say, why are you stressing yourself to go into such detail? You know, this is just fine. Sometimes it makes me worry about whether evolution is taking us towards destruction of the language. But anyway, that was...
You know, that is also a very, very profound spiritual perspective, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to use this kind of language after you've mastered the language. Shortcuts are good after you've understood the nuances of the language.
Correct.
But to start with the shortcut, you know, it ruins your learning. Because exactly. Now if you look at English language, there are a lot of things which people ask, why a particular consonant is silent in a word.
Mm.
Or, you know, why the spelling has to be different when the sound is the same, similar to another word.
Mm.
But actually these all improve your learning, improve your memory power. But when we kind of cut short all this and go to the modern SMS language, I think we lose out on all this. And that's what happens in spirituality also, right? And there is a lot of similarity between the lowermost rung and those in...
Exactly, because you see, a lazy person who doesn't do anything in life and a yogi in the Himalayas, they look almost same. They do nothing, they just sit the whole day. But there is such a world of difference between them. Okay, so sitting without doing anything after having completed the cycle and sitting without doing anything even before you started the cycle are two entirely different things.
It's like the joke I read the other day.
Uh-huh.
A man goes to the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire competition and he's being explained the rules. He says there are 15 questions and if you answer each question you progressively win more money and the 15th question will give you $1 million.
Mm.
And the guy at the hot seat says that, why didn't you ask me the 15th question right away? You know, I think we all are approaching spirituality that way, right? You know?
Exactly, the way we are approaching our English, the way we are approaching spirituality, all seems to be the same. So coming back to the three R's of learning, well, Swami always has emphasized more on educare rather than education. Because Swami says that education is the process by which you stuff a person with things from the external. But Swami says true education must be educare, where you elicit and bring out what is already latent within a person.
Right.
Making patent what is latent. And when we go by that, I feel the three R's of learning in the true sense would be what Swami says as reaction, reflection and resound.
Resound. And it's so different from what actually we talk of the 3 hours as, you know, arithmetic and reading and writing. Because those are all acquiring knowledge.
Hmm.
But this reflection, reaction, resound is a completely different perspective compared to that. Because here you're saying that you are the source of everything that you see.
The focus shifts from the external to the internal.
Right.
While one is needed, we can say that one is needed for a living, this is needed for life.
And I think it's also worth a mention that we are taking this topic on the suggestion of one of our listeners, and we're very happy that Mr. Seelan Naidu
from South Africa,
he wrote to us asking if we could take up this as a topic for discussion. And so here we are, Mr. Seelan Naidu. We are happy that you asked us and
hope you're listening.
Hope you're listening. We're happy to oblige.
Yes, because it was very nice when we ourselves went through the different discourses and different teachings of Swami based on reaction, reflection, resound. We saw that it is indeed a wonderful topic and it is fantastic. So many thoughts came, so many experiences have happened based on this. And therefore, here we are starting with reaction, reflection, resound. Prem, when we talk of reaction, reflection, resound, I would like to repeat this for the sake of our listeners. The first thing that cropped up in my mind was a program that we put up in front of Swami with exactly the same title,
mm-hmm.
Reaction, Reflection, Resound.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all the students of the MSc chemistry batch.
Right.
And therefore, there was a bit of chemistry, you know, that got in.
Yeah, reaction maybe always reminds you of the chemical reaction.
Yes, chemical reaction. For a physicist, it is action, reaction, based on Newton's laws. So for a chemist, you're a chemist, and I'm sure you'll be able to appreciate that. So we began our program, you know, I feel it's nice to begin this satsang also in the same manner, based on the classification of chemical reactions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some chemical reactions which are called instantaneous reactions.
Right.
They happen in a flash. The minute the two reactants come together, the reaction is complete. You can see the color changing instantly or heat getting released instantly. You know, it happens so fast. Something like getting a flaming matchstick to the hydrogen gas and there's an instantaneous pop.
The reaction of sodium with water.
Sodium with water, yes.
Instantaneous.
Yes, to form sodium hydroxide.
Right.
So that these are instantaneous reactions. Some reactions happen instantaneously. And there are some fast reactions. Fast reactions are those, as you know, they take place over some period of time. They're not as fast as the instantaneous ones, but well, within 5-10 minutes.
I think it's said that it's fast, but it's still in a studyable pace.
Correct.
You know, you can still observe it with quite a bit of detail.
Yes, and with normal measuring instruments,
right,
without having to go to the advanced equipment.
Right.
And finally, there are some slow reactions, which take hours, days, weeks,
years,
months, even years, you know, centuries. For example, if we take some of the elements that degrade to some other form,
right,
you know, isotopes, uranium-238 forming from uranium-235, all of these have got something called a half-life.
Right, even carbon-12.
Carbon-12, yes.
That's how we do the carbon dating.
Dating, that's how we find out the age of many of the fossils that we find. Because it has a half-life that spans into thousands of years, I think. 4,600 years, I think, for carbon. So in 4,600 years, the amount of carbon-12 isotope...
Carbon-13 becomes 12, is it?
I am not remembering it. I think it's carbon-12. We have left our chemistry, having got lost in his divine alchemy. But these isotopes degrade to half its quantity in about 4,600 years. So that's an extremely slow reaction.
Right.
So when we presented the program, we presented this fact, and therefore we said that in nature when we see such reactions with such varying paces, is it not right for us to assume that in life too, the reactions that we have for our actions are based on different time periods? I mean, some of the reactions that we get are instantaneous. Some are fast, some take a lot of time.
Yeah, one thing is, each person has a different reaction. I mean, each incident has different reaction times. That is there. Like, I mean, some of the common examples which Swami himself gives is that, you know, when you prick with a pin, you know, the pain is instantaneous and even the blood coming out is instantaneous. Swami is saying the reaction is instantaneous.
And the hand immediately withdraws.
Yeah, and the reflex action, you know, what is said. The other one is when Swami says when you eat something and you belch, that is maybe a few minutes delay is there compared to this, and the long drawn reactions, that is something like what Swami says, when you sow a seed or when you plant a sapling, the result is seen over a period of few years.
Correct.
And the other way of looking at reaction times is that I think even each person has a different time of reaction. Like, suppose I say something offending to you, suppose I say something which hurts you, you may be a person who reacts immediately. There might be other person who, doesn't have the nature of reacting immediately, but he might kind of harbor that hurt for a long time. And his reaction may be seen in another situation when he has the ability to react.
Okay.
That also we've seen in people, when
correct.
People react for something which you did so many years ago, and they would remember and say that you said this sometime back. And so I think it defines a person, the reaction time. But if you're talking about actions and their reactions, I think that leads to a lot of confusion in our daily life also, right?
Exactly, Prem. That is one of the fundamental laws that, the whole spirituality is based on, that every action has a reaction. I'm not using the terms equal and opposite, because that holds good in physics, but in the laws of karma that we see, it's very, very, shall I say, much more complicated than that.
Right.
It's not just about an equal and opposite reaction. But this much is true, that every action has a reaction. And if we see the karma yoga that Lord Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita, he says that man is a creature of action. Action is inevitable.
Right.
So, action is inevitable, and action inevitably brings about a reaction.
Right.
And therefore, we are, whether we like it or not, caught in this action-reaction cycle.
Right.
And now comes the question, these karma, when you say that every action will get a reaction, if you tell somebody that you be good to someone, you'll get good back, you be bad to someone, you get bad back, they are able to digest it, accept it, because it seems just. Correct. You do bad, you get bad. You do good, you get good. The problems arise when you see that you're doing good, but bad seems to be happening to you.
Right.
And you see somebody whom you feel is bad, he's unrighteous, he's doing wrong things, and good seems to be happening to them. That's where the confusion comes, and the problems arise when it's action-reaction.
And that's where this important point of reactions having different times to appear after the action is performed, plays a very important role. Where you don't, it mixes up so much that you don't know this is the reaction for which action.
Yeah, for example, if you see a corrupt official, maybe, you see that he's taking bribes, he's doing all wrong things, you know it, and the next day you get to know that he has won a lottery. And you feel, how is this possible? And maybe you are going about doing service, you are serving every day you set aside 3 hours to go about, do seva, serve the poor, help them out. And one day you return from your service and you see that your house has been burgled. And you feel, this is unfair. I am doing service and my house gets burgled. That person is corrupt and he wins the lottery. What justice is there in the world? Well, that is where actually this karma theory also comes as a relief, that it is right that you did service and your house got burgled, but please do not connect the two. It is not that because you did service, your house got burgled.
Right.
Because the house getting burgled is a reaction to some other action which we don't know, which we have done in the past, which might be even have been in a past life. And therefore, the good that you are doing will come back to you. That is the, confidence-giving suggestion that comes through the karma theory. Because I feel, sometimes things happen which I cannot explain. Why is this thing bad happening to me when I am good? The only solace is, I do not understand what is it that I have done that this is happening to me. But if I continue to do good now, there will come a time when, those reactions are all erased and I will start reaping the rewards of the reactions of the good. And then it will be good all along.
And I think that's the importance of Swami, reiterating over and over again the importance of the presence. The present is so important, because you have no control over the reactions which are coming to you now, good or bad, but you always have control over the future reactions. And that is when you're doing, the time is now, when you have the power over what you're doing right now. Just make sure you're throwing good signals, you're doing good things, speaking good things, you know, thinking good thoughts.
That's why Swami says past is a past is history.
Past is past.
Past is past. Future is a mystery. Present is a gift, and that's why it's called present. And Swami says it's not ordinary present, it's omnipresent. Meaning if you realize who you are, and if you realize the times that you're in now, that's all is needed. Well, that is interesting and nice, and it is comforting. But Prem, one point, you know, that always keeps coming, keeps cropping, is why is there a delay? I mean, yes, natural things we can understand that, you know, you can't get a child before 9 months. It takes 9 months. You can't tell that I want it, the act is done and I need the child. Or you can't say that I have sown the seed, I need the tree. We accept it. We somehow accept it in nature. We accept all this time spans. But when it comes to karma, we feel, why is it? Why is it that when I do good, why don't I get the immediate reward?
Right.
When I do bad, why don't I get punished immediately? Why is it that I'm confused in this manner by it being, you know, delayed and postponed? So this is one thing that always causes confusion.
I think that's what, there should be some reason why some good reactions are held back. Or there should be some reasons why some bad is held back and given to you, you know, over a period of time or given to you in a later time.
Mm.
I think for good being held back, the best thing would be like how a farmer would water his crops.
Okay.
Like, you know, a farmer collects the water for, you know, for watering maybe over a few months, the monsoon season. But he would be releasing it, you know, not just because he has all the water, he wouldn't be releasing all into the fields.
Hmm.
He would have a certain time frame in which he would release it.
Correct.
Maybe everything, you know, every individual has a reason why he's getting good in a delayed response or having bad in a delayed response, right?
Correct. When you said the example of the farmer, Prem, I'm reminded of once what Swami said regarding the Satyasai Gram Seva.
Okay.
The Satyasai Gram Seva is today an institutionalized annual program of the Sri Satyasai University,
right,
where the students of the university go to the neighboring villages. I think it's about 90 to 100 villages or more maybe.
Okay.
And they distribute food and clothing once a year for about a week. And Swami had said that, I make you do this so that in future when you have a need for grace, when you had a need, when you have a need for divine blessings, I will look back at these acts, good acts that you have done. And based on this, I shall, you know, shower on you my grace.
Right.
Which means that was the time the student, that is the time when the students are accumulating grace. So just like the farmer accumulates the water so that it can be released during a drought later on for the crops, in the same manner, when we have the potential and ability to do tremendous good, the good is not given instantly and used up. It is kept for tough times ahead.
Right.
That's what we do with our money, right? I mean, if I earn, say, $1,000 a month, I will not spend it completely. Because if I'm a person who earns $1,000 and spends $1,000, I'll be called a fool. And if I earn $1,000 and spend $1,500, we get the crisis that we are now facing in the world. You know?
Absolutely.
The bubble breaks and you find a crisis. What is intelligent and what every financial advisor will say is, if you earn, to live within your limits, if you earn $1,000, spend $500. Why? Because that is built in. When any good has to come, it's always good to dam up the good, build up a reservoir of the good so that it can be used in times of need.
And actually, you know, talking about the economic crisis, that's exactly what we're doing.
Hmm.
You know, earlier you earn $1,000, then your expenditure or your ability to spend is about $800, $750. But now it is like today you're earning $1,000, which means next year you might be earning $1,200, which means you can spend $1,100.
That's how the logic is taught.
Right.
Given credit cards and...
Given credit cards, and I think we've ruined the whole system with that. But, you know, talking of doing good karma for future, there's another aspect to it. You know, somebody was telling me that if you do good, then good is going to come back to you. If you do bad, then bad is going to come back to you. Then an action is always going to result in more opportunities to receive that reaction.
Expectation comes in.
Expectation comes in. One thing, and it's a cycle. There's no end to it. And if you're looking at breaking from this birth and death cycle as the motive of every spiritual aspirant, even doing good is actually going to draw him into doing more actions or coming into more births to receive the good results of his good actions.
Hmm.
Right? But what Swami says is that with every good action, you actually get mental maturity, wherein you have a better perspective of seeing action itself, which will actually enable you to release yourself from this cycle. Which will lead you to, maybe, you know, we'll come to that a little later, of reducing this ego, which is actually causing you to hold on to your actions, good or bad.
Feel that it's my action, my action. Talking of the delaying in the bad, you know, the analogy that comes to me is, say, if suppose a bank gives you a loan, and at that time you are supposed to pay back.
Right.
You know, if we take as receiving something to be a positive and paying back as a negative, you're supposed to pay back, but the bank doesn't tell you to pay back instantly. It doesn't say that this is your loan plus interest is this, pay back immediately. It gives you chances to pay it in installments. So in the same way, I feel if people ask, why is it that when I do the bad, I'm not immediately punished? If you are immediately punished, my dear fellow, you may not have the strength to be able to bear that punishment.
Absolutely.
And therefore, it is spread out in time and delivered to you as small blows, so that none of the blows kill you. It may hurt you a bit, but you recover from the hurt, you heal, because you have a capacity to heal. And the hurt that is delivered, thanks to the universal wisdom of the Lord, is always lesser compared to the ability, your ability to heal. And that's why they say Swami never gives a 10th grade examination to a 3rd grade student.
Right.
It's always according to your capability that the test is given or the pain is given. Because it is a two-sided coin. When God gives us, if we feel that God gives us pain, there's always accompanying strength also.
Right.
So, therefore, it makes a lot of sense that I do not suffer the consequences of my bad actions or of my negative actions instantly.
Right.
Because I may not have the capacity to bear it. It's always good that it's given over a period of time according to my capability to bear it.
And you know, an observation one devotee was making is that he was quoting a few devotees' life. He said almost all of those devotees, if Swami had saved them from a heart attack, eventually they died of a heart attack.
Okay.
There were devotees who were saved from, you know, cancer. But eventually they succumbed to some form of cancer. So he was trying to make this point that, you know, if you look at it, Swami was actually only delaying the inevitable. And maybe what Swami was giving them was giving them an opportunity to learn something between this eventuality and that.
And why the
and
case?
And they'd be better prepared to accept what was coming their way.
No, you brought out two beautiful examples of heart attack and cancer. But I feel, Prem, why only heart attack and cancer? It is inevitable that one day we have to go. I mean, so anything that is done as what we call grace,
saving one's life, saving one's money,
saving one's relationship, because all these things, all these worldly things, whether it's money, relationships, life, everything, they're all, we know it theoretically, they are all ephemeral, and one day they have to go. So whatever Swami does or God does to save any of this is in fact just delaying the inevitable, that's all. And that inevitable is delayed and the pain is given in short bursts, as you rightly said, so that we are able to learn better from them. And therefore, I think it comes to the point that it makes a lot of sense that good actions are not rewarded immediately. Yeah, some of them are rewarded immediately. And at the same time, bad actions are not punished immediately, while some of them are punished immediately. The reward and punishment are spaced out by an intelligence that is far superior to ours, in a manner so that we will be able to benefit the most spiritually from both.
And I think that's the important point, you know, when you ask that why this delayed response, why over birth times, you know, you don't even know who you were when you did, you know, a good act or a bad act, and you're suffering for it or you're enjoying because of it. I think this is the reason, because karma system, as it is wrongly understood, is not a punishment reward system, but it's a learning system. It's a system which is trying to teach you, and that is why that delay in response, like what good I do, I may never be in a position to actually enjoy it with this understanding which I'm having right now.
Correct.
Or with this desire to enjoy the fruits. You know, a person does something good, thinking that he's going to enjoy the benefit, and maybe he's going to be spiritually evolved by the time the benefit comes, and it's not going to give him as much joy as it would have given him when he was in a lower state of understanding. But I think that is the speciality of the system, where you are train to do good initially because good is what you will get in return if you do good. But moving towards a state where you do good because you have to do good, not because of what is going to come in return.
Because it's your duty, as the fire burns and the water wets.
It's your nature to do it.
It's your nature to be dharmic and be good. And one more aspect, you know, about action-reaction is that it's inevitable. You know, people, we often hear that. They say, you know, they did this bad and in order to atone for this bad, they go to a temple and break 108 coconuts. Or they say that, I shall do this good. You know, and the action-reaction says that you cannot erase a negative that you do with a positive that you do.
Absolutely.
If you do, say, this comes because mathematically, we are taught that -1 + 1 = 0. So it's nullified. If I do -5, all I need to do is +5 and it's nullified. But in action reaction, when you do -5 and when you do +5, remember that you will be given the reaction for the -5 and given the reaction for the +5 as well.
Right.
And unless you are in a state that is beyond the body-mind complex, you will not be able to put the -5 and +5 together and make them 0, because your response to the +5 will generate further reactions and your response to the -5 will also generate further reactions, which will ensure that you are kept in this cycle of action and reaction forever. It's a loop.
And I think that's the beauty of some action like devotion. Hmm. If you could call devotion as an action, I think that's the beauty. If you look at the life of Bhadrachalam Ramdas, you know, he was imprisoned for 12 years, I think. And there's so many versions of it, but one version says that he was imprisoned for 12 years by the Tanisha, who tortured him till Rama appeared and gave him the money.
Mm.
So the question is, why did Rama delay for 12 years? And there are 12 years he goes through, you know, unspeakable torture. But then there is the other story behind this thing where he says that he, in a previous birth, Bhadrachalam Ramdas in a previous birth actually imprisons a parrot and derives joy out of torturing that parrot.
Oh.
Which is in his, you know, which he has kept captive. And
I mean, torture as it looks like, not that he's torturing or...
He was actually torturing it.
Oh, okay.
Seems he used to take a needle and poke at its eye and see what its reaction, literally like that.
Okay.
Okay, but actually he had done a lot of good activity in the sense of repentance, in the sense of turning towards God. So that is why the 12 years which he actually was repaying for a bad act, he was immersed in actually a state of bliss.
Mm.
Though he was suffering, because of his devotion to Rama, he actually was going through a period where literally he was, you could say that, you know, he might have been in a numb state where the...
Where bad, God's grace acted as an anesthesia.
Really.
Because...
And at the end of it came redemption.
Exactly, Prem. Swami says that even... An avatar, when it takes up a gross human body, which is bound by the laws of karma, even an avatar seems bound by the karma.
Right.
Because we see that example in the Ramayana. Right. You know, just before Sita is brought to him after Ravana is defeated in the battle.
Right.
You know, right, what Rama says to Sita?
Right. And I mean, it's very shocking, actually, even for Sita and even for all the Vanaras, because they see how much Rama has loved Sita and what extent he has gone to actually win her back.
Mm.
And when Sita is brought in front of her, Rama is refusing even to look at her.
Mm.
And he's saying that you have lived, you know, in the kingdom of another man for 9 months.
In the palace of another man.
How do I know that you are pure?
Mm.
So he says, prove your purity by entering the fire.
Hmm.
And Sita is shocked to hear this, and Sita is saying, Rama, are you telling this to me? I can understand if anybody else questions me. Are you questioning my purity?
Hmm.
Okay, and she says, I can't bear listening these words from you. And then Rama says that, see, these are not my words to you. These are the reflection of the words you gave a pure soul like Lakshmana.
I remember when Rama has gone hunting for the golden deer.
Right.
And the golden deer happens to be a demon in disguise and cries out, Oh Lakshmana, Oh Sita, Oh Lakshmana.
In the voice of Rama.
Sita is fooled, but not Lakshmana, who is guarding her.
Right.
And Lakshmana is not ready to leave Sita to go in search of Rama because that has been Rama's command. In order to force him and provoke him to go, Sita says, I know why you're staying back, because you want to enjoy me yourself. That hurts Lakshmana.
You had an eye on me.
Because of that, Lakshmana goes, and that is when Sita is kidnapped by Ravana. So, yes. And you know, it is not as if that Rama did this and he was freed of it. Just as Rama unjustly accused Sita, later on he too was accused by a washerman.
Right.
We know how the story goes. So this action-reaction cycle goes on and on and on, and everybody is bound to it.
Absolutely. In fact, I was telling you before the discussion started about Edgar Cayce.
Yeah, Edgar Cayce, yeah.
Yeah, there is one anecdote in his life, you know, where people from a particular town come to him and they are suffering from drought for many years. So they come to him seeking for solace, you know, is there anything we can do? So he goes into his meditation and he comes back and he says that each one of you in some previous birth have cursed rain, that you didn't like rain.
Okay.
When it rained, you were very disturbed and you didn't like it and you used to curse, why the hell does it rain?
Hmm.
And he said, because of that, you all have been brought together in a village which is having drought.
Oh, okay.
So it's so important, you know, to be so particular about our thoughts, right?
Hmm. Well, Prem, quite a discussion on reaction it has been. You know, this happens every time. Even when we did the program in Bhagwan's presence,
right,
on reaction, reflection, resound, by the time we come towards the end of the module on reaction, you know, it's a very low that is set around because it looks so hopeless. We just cannot understand it. And what do we do?
It's almost like a ringmaster standing with a whip and every step you take is a downfall.
Yeah, it looks like that. But well, you know, giving back hope and courage is reflection. But before we go to reflection part of the second hour, I think we should listen to that beautiful Telugu song, which I think mostly has been composed by Bhagwan himself. I'm not very sure of it because it's part of those series of songs which were composed by Bhagwan and yes, sung by those lady devotees who have been trained by Swami. So
a lot of these songs were spontaneous outpourings.
From
when we spoke to one of the members of the Kuppam family, they said every miracle they saw would burst out into a song.
Oh, wow.
Literally, you know, there's one song which goes that here is this enchanting Sai who filled water in the petrol tank and drove the car.
Okay.
That was after that incident happened.
Mm.
And I think so many beautiful songs, and this is...
So whether it came directly from Swami,
right,
or indirectly from Swami as an inspiration to somebody,
absolutely,
this is a beautiful song that shows that whatever you may do, nobody is beyond karma.
Maybe
or
just give the meaning of the song, Karma Data Vashama. Is it possible to overcome karma?
Correct.
And you may be a learned man, you may be a powerful man, a strong man. Whatever you are, it is not possible.
You may be very intelligent, you may have progeny, you may be rich, you may be influential, but you cannot overcome karma or this action-reaction cycle.
There is no bribe for this.
There is no bribe for this.
Okay, dear listeners, we're going to play for you this song, and on the other side of the song, we're going to continue our discussion, but we will be taking the next hour, that is
Reflections.
Thank you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. One more beautiful point, Prem, about the karma, you know.
Right.
Just now we heard this beautiful song that says that nobody can escape karma. Swami also has often said this in his discourses in the form of a beautiful poem. You know, saying that when you come into this earth, you come with no ornaments whatsoever. There are no beads, there are no gemstones, there are no diamonds with you. But the only ornament that you carry, birth after birth, is a necklace of your karmas, the necklace of your actions, which, whose reactions you're going to go through in this life. I think before we go to reflection, we'll just hear that padyam, that right. poem that Swami often says.
Talli garbhamunundi janminchunappudu కంఠమాలలవేమి కామరావు తల్లి గర్భము నుండి జన్మించినప్పుడు కంఠమాలలవేమి కామరావు మంచి ముత్యపు సరు నచ్చునకు లేవు మేల్మి బంగారు దండ మెడకు లేదు రత్నాల హారము రంజిల్లగాలేదు గోమేధికపు మాల కూడలేదు వజ్రాల మాలలు వన్న గుల్కగలేదు పచ్చల కొండలు పొదకలేదు కలదు 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 అందరి కంఠమందు కలదు కలదొక్క మాల అందరి కంఠమందు పూర్వజన్మాల కర్మను పొందుబరచి మంచి అయినను చెడుగైన తుంచకుండా బ్రహ్మ నీకిచ్చి పంపును బరువుమాల కర్మలన్నీ చేర్చిన కంఠమాల కర్మలన్నీ చేర్చిన కంఠమాల కర్మలన్నీ మాలన్నీ చేర్చిన కంఠమాల.
Yeah, that's that beautiful Padyam Arvind, where Swami is saying that you've not come with a garland of diamonds or pearls or, you know, no other gemstone, but only the past actions of yours, the punyas and the whatever karma you have, the karma mala, that is the only thing you're born with.
So, listening to this, Prem, often the feeling arises that we are all hopelessly trapped. I mean, how do I escape this? What is this? Any action I do, there's a reaction that binds me, irrespective of whether it's good or bad. And the reaction becomes my future action, which yields a future reaction. So I'm caught hopelessly. And even if I'm caught hopelessly, is there a way? See, what happens is, I don't mind being caught hopelessly as long as only good things are happening. I mean, so it is nice. Which means, for those good reactions to happen, I must have only good actions, but how do I do it? Because if I face the reaction of some past action which I'm not aware about and it's bad, my reaction to that will be bad and which will again sow the seed for a future bad, right? It seems like a hopeless trap.
And also, you know, one might wonder that what way is this topic of reflection, reaction and resound is different from just the topic of karma which we took some time back.
Mm.
And I feel that is why this has another aspect into it.
Hmm.
Where it kind of empowers each person to an extent we have not imagined so far. And that's why this reflection is very important.
Hmm.
And I'm reminded of something which Swami used to tell when I joined in my first UG. I've heard Swami saying this during the Trai session. It was almost like an open challenge Swami threw at us.
Hmm.
Swami said that if you criticize anybody,
hmm,
if you look at anybody and say that, hey, see, he's doing this and it's wrong,
hmm,
or, you know, he's having this bad quality,
hmm,
be assured that within a short span of time, you will see that quality appearing in you.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
You will see that the same thing which you actually did not like in another person, you will be doing the same thing. You will be reacting the same way. And then Swami said, the same way, if you see something in somebody, something good, and you admire it, know for sure that within a very short time, that same admirable quality will appear in you.
Wow.
And Swami said, you try it out. It will work.
Prem, you're such a wonderful speaker, great thinker, and a fantastic human being.
And same to you, I should say. And you know, Arvind, I mean, for one, you know, not that I went and tried out this thing, but it really does work. Because sometimes so many, you know, somebody would come and tell, hey, you're good at this. Hey, you know, this is nice about you.
Mm.
And it would immediately strike me that this was something which I admired in a person when I was, you know, new into Swami's fold.
Okay.
And this has been a sentiment which has been shared with me by many of my friends.
Hmm.
And of course, the bad which you've seen, I think that is sometimes faster.
Okay.
When you criticize somebody, within a day or two, you will see yourself doing the same mistake. And, in one of the discussions, in one of the discourses Swami gave in Trai, the other option which Swami gave, you know, because spontaneously we criticize, and spontaneously we kind of find fault in others. You know, a very practical solution which Swami gave was, when you find fault with others, immediately look for something good in that person.
Okay.
Suppose you point out something wrong in a person, immediately see, is there anything good about him which you like?
Hmm.
And dwell your mind on that. Or speak about that. Suppose I'm talking about somebody else to you, and I'm talking something bad about them. Is there anything good about that person? Immediately I can tell to back up what I've told.
Okay.
Swami said this is a way of countering what...
At least building a positive cushioning. Right. So that it's not only bad.
And with time, you will actually forget all the bad in others and you will be only concentrating on the good in others.
That's why Swami narrates the story of Jesus Christ walking along with his disciples, and he says that they come across a carcass of a dog.
Right.
It's been dead for more than a week now, and it's stinking and it's rotting flesh. Flesh is almost gone, the bones are there. And while all the disciples, you know, they close their nose in disgust and make faces and turn away and walk the other way, Jesus gets a smile on his face and he says, wow, what wonderfully sharp teeth are there in that dog.
Right.
So, Swami presents this as an example of being able to see good, even in things which apparently seem to have no good at all.
Right.
And that is what elevates one to the status of being a Christ. Being Jesus.
And not only seeing good, you know, if you look at human civilization, you know, being part of the animal kingdom, if we ask ourselves, why have we progressed so much, leaving behind the other mammals? And I think one thing which I could point out is, man has the ability to take out what he wants from things which he doesn't want.
Separating
his,
the good.
His ability to extract what is good for him. I think that is what the other mammals don't have. You know, if the food is available in the form of food it eats. But man can pull out food from where, you know, just imagine.
In fact, today we have vitamin B12 tablets.
Right.
We have pulled out nutrient and micronutrients out of the food.
Imagine if the first person who discovered a pineapple looked at the outer skin of the pineapple and never tasted it, you would have lost a fruit.
Correct.
And I think that's the ability of man to take out what he wants. Like, he is able to extract the metal from the ore. He's able to extract what is good from water for himself. You know, now we are looking at making seawater into sweet water. His ability to take out what is good and what he wants and to leave out what is bad. And I think if we all look at the people around us and do that every day, take only what is good in them and absorb only what is good and just ignore the bad. I think that's the way to progress from, like, how we have progressed from being other mammals to a human race which is definitely intellectually superior. Maybe from this journey from being man to
a superman
or
spiritually
divinity.
Evolved person.
Right.
What Swami said in Trayi reflects the age-old proverb that everything is but a reflection of the inner being.
Right.
What you see outside is what is actually within you. And that's why Swami says that if you criticize somebody, you will find those same faults in you.
Right.
And if you praise somebody, you will find the same in you. Because it is only when that is existent in you.
And nothing is more irritating than that, you know.
Yeah.
When you point out somebody's mistake and you end up in the same situation doing the same mistake. I think nothing is more embarrassing than that.
Because if you are able to see a mistake, it is because it exists in you.
Yeah,
you know, in Kannada we have a proverb, we say that only a donkey can recognize a donkey. So if you call somebody a donkey, you know, there's even a Hitopadesha story. There are two scholars who go to the king's court and they expound on the scriptures, and the king is immensely pleased with them. So he would like to reward them. And, you know, he goes to one of the pundits, the priest, and asks him, you know, I'm so pleased. You both are mighty scholars. I want to, you know, reward that other priest. What do you think I should give him? So this scholar feels, my God, I have spoken here, and he wants to reward the other person. He says, sir, king, listen to me. He might have sounded very wise, but he's just copying whatever I know. He's actually a donkey. He doesn't know anything. So the king says, okay. And he goes to the other scholar, asks him the same, and he gets the same response. The other scholar feels that I am the scholar, what is that person getting rewarded for? So he tells him the same, oh king, he copies, he's just a donkey, and same thing.
Okay.
And the king presents both of them with a bundle of hay. And he says, each of you have felt that, I felt both of you were scholars, but you revealed the truth about yourselves, both of you seem to be donkeys. You know, it is, these stories from the Hitopadesha and all, they have been Hita Upadesha, which means good advice, they have all been made basing on some of the truths in life. And this is indeed a truth in life, that what you see outside is what you are inside.
Absolutely.
And therefore we can do a therapy by seeing only good outside so that we become good inside.
And I think that's that famous story from the Mahabharata which Swami narrates. I think we would have narrated it.
Yes,
the
you please
also,
narrate it again. Yes.
You know, where Krishna just sets up a small play where he calls Yudhishthira and says, find for me one bad person, one evil person in your kingdom. And he calls Duryodhana and says, you find one good person in your kingdom. And then Duryodhana comes back and says that, Krishna, I didn't find even one good person in the whole kingdom. And if at all I could point out one good person, I think it's only me. There is no other good person. And then Yudhishthira, the noble one, the dharmic one, he comes and says that, oh Krishna, I searched and I searched and I searched. I just couldn't find even one bad person in this whole world. And if there was anybody who had a little bit of flaw in them, I think it should be only me.
And one is worshipped today as the embodiment of wickedness, unrighteousness, while the other is considered as Dharma Murti. His name itself is Dharma Raja, the king of Dharma. And that is obviously seen. You know, I am reminded of another hypothetical situation which I love it because it is so nice. And many of the devotees, many of us who have had darshan in the last 5 to 10 years,
okay,
we may be able to, you know, associate with that. So, say this is set somewhere in 2008-2009 when, you know, darshan timings are not fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Say two devotees have come. They have come from the nearby town of Bangalore, city of Bangalore to Puttaparthi, mm-hmm, and they are sitting in the darshan hall. Both of them have had a horrible week before that.
Okay.
So now what I'm describing for one person holds good for the other person also. These are two similar cases. Okay. So he has had a very bad week. He has fought. He has had a tough time in office. So much work has been dumped on him unfairly. He has been criticized and his appraisal is not good. He's so irritated. He has come back home and he has had a fight with his wife and he doesn't know what to do. And he feels that, you know, Swami is my only refuge. I'll go to Swami. So he tells his wife, I'm going to Swami. She says, I'm also coming. And that is how he, his wife and his child have landed up in Puttaparthi. And he's sitting for darshan. And he has been called, you know, to work overtime on Sunday. So he has just got the Saturday off. So he has to be back in Bangalore Saturday evening. He has booked by the Saturday evening bus. And he's hoping I'll catch one quick glimpse of my savior, of my Lord. Something Swami will do that will make me feel good, I'm sure. He'll resurrect me and I'll go back. And then he's waiting and sitting in the darshan hall. It becomes 5, it becomes 5:15, 5:30, 6 o'clock. Swami has not yet come. 6:15 is his bus. Now he starts saying, what is this, Swami? I've been waiting for you and you're not coming. This is bad. I've left everything, Swami, and I'm turning to you. And you don't even come out for darshan. Is this fair? Another 5 minutes I'll be missing my bus. I'm going to rush now. He says, and Swami still does not come. He gets up, he's very angry now. He's upset on Swami also. He says, Swami, you ruined it. You ruined it. I came here only for darshan and I didn't even get that. He rushes. He tells his wife, it's time to leave now. Come fast. The child sees this tension and, you know, the child starts crying. He wants an ice cream. The father gives him a slap and says, shut up, let's go. He goes, he's just late for the bus. The bus has left. He says, see this, Swami, how he's doing? He's arranging things so that everything gets messed up. Okay, now we have to go by a taxi. He pays 5 times the fare, gets a taxi booked, and he goes and he says that, you know, it's all messed up. Everything went from bad to worse. And this kind of Swami, into his hand I would like to give my life. What a mistake I'm making. Another person is sitting in the darshan line. He has had the same thing. He's just waiting. It becomes 6:10 and he says, Swami, I've had a very, very, very tough week. And I felt that having your darshan is the only solution for that. And since I feel it's the only solution, I don't care, Swami. If you don't come today, if you come tomorrow, I'll stay tomorrow and have your darshan. But I'm going to stay, Swami. I will wait. He waits. Swami comes out for darshan at 6:30. He knows that his bus is missed. And Swami comes and when he passes by him, Swami doesn't look at him. Swami doesn't do anything. But just seeing Swami, he feels some strange energy. He feels, wow, this is my Lord. You know, if he is there to back me, what can ever happen to me? Some positive vibes come in, he walks out after darshan. And his wife comes to him and she tells him, you know, we missed our bus. The way Swami came late, I thought he may not come only. He says, see, that is my Lord. That is my Lord, he tells his wife. He says, he would not have come out at all today. I think it was not meant for him to come out. But he knew. He knew that there was one child of his who had come and was wanting desperately to have his one darshan. And I think for my sake, though it was late, he came nevertheless. And he's so happy. And he sees his child wanting an ice cream. He says, why one? Eat two. I'm so happy. He buys a sari for his wife. And then he says, let's have dinner here. We'll see. Swami will take care. Having dinner, he bumps into a person who says that he's going alone to Bangalore. He says, why don't you join me in my car? He says, great. And for free, he gets a ride back home. And he's so thrilled and he says, now you know, he tells his wife, now you know why I have given my life into the hands of this person, into the hands of Swami, because he makes it so beautiful. Those are the two perspectives of those two people. If we are to ask Swami what happened on that day, Swami says, I don't know, 6:30 I went for darshan, that's all. The situation is so neutral. Swami came for darshan at 6:30. That's it. That ruined the whole week and everything and shook up the faith of a person. While that same thing made a beautiful day for a person and strengthened his faith so much. Which means though we think that it's only imagination and our thoughts, they are so powerful. Because all said and done, Swami says we are all embodiments of the Lord and therefore our thoughts are divine thoughts. They are so powerful that they turn true. And the whole world becomes a reflection of the inner being. So reflection comes as a solution to our problem of reaction because it gives the strength into our hands. If we are able to tune our inner being, we can transform our world.
Absolutely. You know, talking of Swami being a reflection of our whatever, inner peace or inner turmoil, as the case may be, I'm reminded of this incident which Mr. Indreshwar shared with us, you know, the grandson of
the Rajmata
of Jamnagar. You know, he said that when he was in 12th standard, Swami took him along with the other boys to Kodaikanal. And throughout the trip in Kodai, his only problem was, what am I going to do next? And he wanted to ask Swami. So every opportunity he got, every opportunity he could ask this question to Swami, he would ask and Swami would say that, no, I think you would do well in the army. Because all your uncles and everybody is in the army. I think you will do well in the army.
Okay.
So he was happy. The next day again Swami would say, you're doing your 12th, what are you going to do next? And he said, Swami, you said you go to the army. So he said, no, 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 army is, the life is too tough and you cannot even put up with the discipline of the hostel. How can you do in the army? And Swami said, I think you do BCom and do business.
Okay.
Then business will be good for you. So he said, okay. And that very evening, Swami comes and asks him that, your 12th standard, what are you going to do next?
Okay.
And then he says, Swami, you said BCom and business. Swami said, business, what do you know about business? If you start business, it'll be all losses. I'll tell you what. You do MSc, BSc, MSc, and you do research. And you know, Swami was changing like this almost every session. In every session, Swami would come and tell him, you do the army, no, you do business. And Swami said, no, you stay back here, I will give you a job here. No, you do this, you do that. And imagine, he's just a 12th standard boy. So he was all confused. And he says that at one point, you know, there is that staircase from Swami's room landing in the living space in Saishruti. So he was standing at the beginning of the staircase, so that when Swami would come down, he would somehow corner Swami and ask Swami that, you know, Swami, please clear my confusion. So he was standing there and he said there was a beautiful decorum then. The moment anybody comes and stands there, the rest of the boys would understand that Swami is, that boy is trying to convey something very personal to Swami. So the moment Swami comes, everybody would vanish, giving that privacy to Swami and that boy.
Okay,
so there were a lot of boys who were cleaning the carpet, they were wiping the windows and everything. The moment Swami came down to this boy, everybody just slipped into corners and just vanished from there and literally gave an interview room for Swami and that boy. That's Swami, the boy caught Swami's feet and said, Swami, you keep changing like this. I'm totally confused. I really don't know what to do. I'm getting into depression. What do you really want me to do? So he said, see, I didn't tell you anything. You wanted to go to the army. I just reflected the thought. Then you wanted to be a businessman. I again reflected the thought. Then you wanted to stay here and do MSc and you wanted to spend more time with Swami. I reflected the thought. So I'm just a mirror. I just keep reflecting whatever thought arises in your mind. And you know, then Indreshwar asks a very important question. I think it would arise in all of us, our minds when we listen to this. He said, Swami, if that is the case, my mind is always going to be, you know, changing. And if you're going to always reflect only what is arising in my mind, then I'll be in an eternal state of confusion. And what is the solution to it? And you know, Swami said a very beautiful thing. Swami said, see, I'm in the depths of your heart. Okay, and suppose you're looking at a pond of water. As long as the pond is murky, you will see only your reflection. But if the pond is clear, you will see what is in the bottom of the pond. Swami said, now your mind is murky, your mind is full of thoughts and confusion. So I'm only reflecting what is the confusion in your mind. Swami said, let the thoughts settle. Just leave it to me. Just don't think about your future. Don't worry about your future. Then you will know what Swami wants you to do.
God is a pure reflection. That is such a power, empowering statement actually, because it is, you know, very often we say that we are surrendering to God. And just like you brought out in that perfect example, when we state or when we talk to anybody or when we do anything, we say that we have surrendered to God. But in our heart, we have our own likes, we have our own dislikes. Say for example, I want to achieve something. I say, I have surrendered it to the Lord. I will just do my action. I don't care. Whatever the Lord will, let it happen. That is just what I state. In reality, whatever the Lord wills, if it happens, I am not happy with it. I want it this way. I want it this way. I want it this way. See, I want, suppose, I'm seeking a friendship. I say, Lord, you are my friend. So send me somebody just to be a good friend of mine. Whoever you send is fine, O Lord. But though that is what I state, that is actually my desired state. But when it actually happens, no, Swami, how this, we don't have common likes. How can this person be my friend? Or we don't share the common passions. How can this person be my friend? Or imagine, suppose, what if God sends a friend who does not say, sends a friend to me who does not believe in Swami? This has happened. I feel like, Swami, how can he be my friend? He does not even believe in you. See, when I said that I surrender to you totally, I should be ready to acceptance is the first step in surrender. We are not ready to accept. The minute it comes to acceptance, we start putting up our own desires. Those are the thoughts. Those are the desires which, you know, Swami said that makes the pond murky. Makes us unable to see the divinity beneath. And then we blame God. God is just like a mirror. If I say, I hold up my wallet in front of it and say, I want this wallet, the mirror is going to show me the wallet. Right? The beautiful thing is, if I hold up my iPhone and say, I don't want this iPhone. Now, who will want to say that? Anyway, suppose I say that, what will the mirror show me? The mirror will show me the same iPhone. So it does not matter what I want and what I don't want. What matters is what I hold. And very often in life, we hold things that we don't like. And that is why we end up feeling sad, frustrated, depressed. Because if within our thoughts and in our feelings, if we are holding only things that we like, will we ever be sad? Will we ever be frustrated or irritated? We will always be happy. But no, the very fact that we are sad, depressed, frustrated, feeling that we are the victim, is because we are holding such things within us. And when that gets reflected to us, that is what will get reflected to us, because God is a pure mirror.
Absolutely. And that's why Swami emphasizes over and over again of the importance of gratitude. You know, when Swami says that when you thank for what you have received, you will be given more opportunities to thank.
Correct.
But if you crib and you curse,
you'll be given more opportunities to crib.
Crib and curse. So that's why Swami says that for every little thing, if you can thank God. And Swami says, if you drop a handkerchief, somebody picks it up and gives it to you, you say, thank you, sir. And you said, for the God who has given you so much, you're not ready to say thanks.
And you're finding things that are not there.
Absolutely. And I think that is the empowering nature of reflection. You spoke about reaction, but reflection, that is why it's so important. Because what you are, you know, you cannot change the world. If the world is unpleasant, if the world is unhappy, if the world is ugly, you cannot change the world. But there are some things which you can change in yourself, which will reflect in the world around you.
The statement that you made right now, Prem, if the world is ugly, if the world is bad, you cannot change it. The beauty is, once you change your inside, the world no longer is ugly.
Absolutely.
Because if the world is ugly, your inside is ugly. That's why it is said, yad bhavam tad bhavati. I mean, Swami says there is no problem in the srishti, which is creation. All the problems lie in the drishti, which is vision. There's no problem in the creation, there's problem in the vision.
And even more confusion comes when you try to change the srishti. You know, it's, even if you resign to the fact and you sit in a corner, it's fine, but people are going out to change the world without looking within. And that is where the problem comes in. And the Chinnakatha, which Swami says very beautifully, where a king is taken ill with some weird kind of a disease, and the royal surgeon is called in, and he says that the problem with you is, you know, you are not able to see all colors. So make sure that you see only green color. That will cure you. Okay, and the royal surgeon leaves the court, and after a few months, when he comes back to the city, he sees that all the streets have been painted green, all the buildings have been painted green, the cattle has been painted green, and you know, the whole city is in green. So he walks into the king's chamber and says, what have you done? He says, you told me to see only green. And then the surgeon says, you fool, all you had to do was wear a pair of green spectacles.
Instead of trying to change the world.
Change the world.
Same thing where Swami says that if you have to walk across a path that is strewn with thorns, don't try to clear all the thorns. You will hurt your hands. just wear a pair of slippers.
Right.
Walk across. It's all about changing the individual. But no. The problem with us is, whenever anything happens, we always feel that we are fine. We have done good. We have shown so much of love for Swami. We are such devoted. We make a martyr of ourselves and wallow in self-pity and find all the faults in the world outside. The world is cruel. The world is this. The world is this. But yet, you know, I place my faith in my Lord. I mean, somehow it transforms into a kind of self-pity. This makes us feel that the world is in need of a change. I am reminded of the analogy. I think this is a reiteration. I don't mind repeating it 100 times because it's so powerful. During one of the Sai Sannidhi meets, you know, when it comes to trying to change the world, Swami gave an example. He said, the world is a hall of mirrors. He said, once a dog entered the hall of mirrors. And when it entered the hall of mirrors, it saw all around, it saw so many dogs waiting. It felt, oh my God, if I do not assert my supremacy here, these dogs are going to assert theirs. And so it barked. And when it barked, Swami said that all the 1,000 dogs barked back at it.
Right.
He said, my God, I'll put them in place. And so the dog attacks one of the dogs. And Swami said the mirror fell down, broke. And 1,000 new dogs came and started barking at the dog. And Swami said, only dogs behave in the world like that. Swami said, you know what a man will do? When a man walks into the hall of mirrors, he only is filled with admiration because he knows that wherever he is seeing himself. And Swami said, if at all he notices a defect, and Swami did that so beautifully, you know, like as if the hair has got crumpled, he immediately corrects himself and the defect gets rectified. You know, when you enter a hall of mirrors and you see that the hairstyle is not fine, you do not go and comb the mirror. You just comb your own hair and it becomes perfect. Swami said, that is how a human is supposed to behave in the world. If you are seeing a defect in the world, know that that defect lies in you. Rectify it and it will be gone. And that is why there is no problem in the srishti. It's only in your drishti.
And I think that is the most important demarcating factor of a man who is turning to spirituality. Because if you are becoming a spiritual man, you will look within. That's why Swami says sadhana is the inward path. Because everything which happens to you, every problem which comes to you, you will look within for solution, not without. I think that is why this reflection is so important, and I think it's total internal reflection, right?
Correct.
That's what it is. And that is why this is such a redeeming hour among the 3 hours.
Exactly. Because it empowers us, it brings a center of control within ourselves rather than without. Just imagine if I feel that, the other way, that is, not that the world is a reflection of the inner being, but everything that's happening reflects in my inner being, then I'm just like a remote controlled car, a toy that is in controlled by circumstances, by people, by events, by situations. Everything in the world seems to control me. Swami says, no, learn the correct perspective. You are controlling everything in the world. Once you change your inner world, that's why, you know, I may not be able to transform the world, but I can definitely transform my world. And this has been focus of Swami's teachings always. Even when it comes to dharma or goodness, when people ask, what is the use of being dharmic? What is the use of being good? It is not going to change the world. Yes, it will not change the world.
Can one good man make any impact?
Correct. Swami says, your goodness is like a lamp in a dark room that the world is strewn with so much furniture. Your goodness will ensure that you do not bump into any furniture. Your goodness will protect you. And therefore, your journey will be smooth. Your world will be beautiful. And in another way, Swami says the same thing, that there have been thousands of cases of people without faith who have been destroyed. But nammi tadinavaru leru, leru, leru. Swami says there is not even a single case of a person who had faith in the Lord who has been let down.
Ruined.
Because faith, goodness, dharma, all these are so closely intertwined. This will protect. It will not transform the world, but it will transform your world. And therefore, reflection is a very empowering hour.
And I think we're left with just one last hour. So we will get back to that. Maybe we'll just play a little song, which the song is on reflection. And after that, we will reflect on...
on reflection and resound.
On reflection and resound, and we'll wind up this satsang.
hatred, envy, or greed. That reflection's his reflection. Sai Baba's divinity. Reach inside of the mirror's casing. Lying dormant in Swami's keeping until you can see that divine love that has been waiting. Release from mortal bonds to unite with God's infinity. Beloved Baba's divinity. Baba, 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 my Sai. Baba, 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 my Sai, Baba. That perfect love that has been waiting. Release from mortal bonds to unite with God's infinity. Beloved Baba's divinity.
Yes, Arvind, coming to the last R, resound. You know, talking of resound, you know, the word which comes to your mind is echo.
Correct.
Where when you speak out something and it comes back to us. And there's this beautiful Chinnakatha when you talk of resounding in the echo, where there is this, I think Swami says that there is a
shepherd boy
who takes his sheep to the valley. And one day he comes back and he's a little upset. He tells his mother that, you know, there is somebody in the hills who hurls abuses at me. And the mother says, what happened? What exactly happened? And she realizes that this boy is actually talking about the echo. And then the mother tells him that, you know what? You talk sweet words to that voice in the hills and it will start treating you very nicely. And so the boy goes and he says very nice things and he gets very nice things and he comes back to his mother and says, exactly, mom, when the voice in the hills is not so bad. Actually, it is talking nice things to me.
When I said, I love you, it told back, I love you.
Right. I think that was the very important message Swami was giving in that song, that what comes back to you is something which you have sent out some time back.
And one more subtle aspect, you know, it is not there as the Chinnakatha, but it is so evident in that. You know, the echo that comes back to you, if you say, I love you, it does not come back as, I love you. It comes back as, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. You know, it is like almost I said it once, but I got it back 10 times.
Right.
And that is another thing that Swami says, that with, it is not, everything is not very linear. You know, that has been the root for one of the most famous propositions of scientific thought, which is the butterfly effect. It goes back, and there is the chaos theory that has been propounded. It goes back to the fact that nothing in the universe is linear. It's not equal and opposite as we believe. Because it started with one man's efforts in finding out weather patterns. And in calculating the weather, he saw that when he did 2 iterations of the same thing, the resulting weathers were totally different. On one side you had a sunny day, on the other side you had a snowy day. How could such varying differences come when you have taken the same input parameters? That was his question.
Okay.
And he found out that the fault lay in him rounding up the decimal places. He had rounded up his figures after the 3rd decimal place. After the third decimal place, because you know when you take something like wind speed,
mm-hmm.
after the third decimal place, that wind speed is something like what you would breathe out or the amount of wind that is generated by the flap of a butterfly's wing.
Okay.
That little it is, so he felt that is negligible, it won't affect the climate. But apparently it does. And that is why this famous statement is, a butterfly flapping its wings in Indonesia can cause a tornado in Mexico. And that is the butterfly effect. Which brings us back to, if we do good, we think that what is my little good going to help? My little good is like that butterfly wing flap which can cause a tornado of goodness in the world. And therefore, we should keep doing good because the bad also can happen the same way. The bad can also spiral up and become a gigantic bad tornado. And therefore, it is important to realize that we are empowered to do good and we do good so that it is goodness that spreads all around. And that is the resound that comes.
And in fact, you know, Swami was talking about this, especially in places like Parthi, you know, where it's called a Punyakshetram, where God himself has walked. And in fact, this was told by a great yogi to one of our devotees who was sharing this with me. He said, this place is so potent that every good act that you do here in the presence of Swami will come back to you in multifold.
Hmm.
But the catch is, every bad that you do will also come back to you in manifold.
There it is, the resound.
So you have to be very, very careful with your actions and thoughts in places such as this. But I think it holds good for every other place. Because as I said, as we started before, karma theory is not a punishment theory. Because if it was just justice and punishment and reward, you should get exactly what you have done.
Hmm.
But because it's a learning process, I think if you will learn only with a louder resound, I think you will get a louder resound.
It's an evolutionary process.
Right.
And that is why Swami always stresses on Trikarna Shuddhi. You know, Trikarna Shuddhi is often loosely translated as unity in thought, word and deed. It brings up, like you should think the same thing, speak the same thing and do the same thing. Swami says, Manasekam, Vachasekam, Karmanyekam, Mahatmanam. You become a great person when you have unity in thought, word and deed. But Trikarna, this brings a question like, so if I think of killing, speak of killing and go and murder a person, am I a great person? That is where the word Shuddhi of Trikarna Shuddhi comes into play. Shuddhi means purity. We need to have unity and purity of our thought, word and deed. And that is how we can create a more beautiful world for ourselves.
And it's so beautiful, the thought, word and deed. Thought is nothing but reflection.
Yes, we reflect.
And word is resound.
Perfect.
And deed is reaction. Right? Wow. Every action is reaction. So it is like, that is why, you know, reflection, reaction, resound and thought, word and deed are so intertwined, and Trikarna Shuddhi, as you said, is so important.
We need to have purity and unity in our thoughts, word and deed. If, you know, with every mathematical or theory in physics, there is something called the rule of the thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, if you do not want to understand the whole thing, no problem. Just remember this one thing, it's enough. So, the rule of the thumb here is, have unity. Have unity, which means truthfulness, honesty, and purity, which means goodness in your thought, word and deed. And that's enough, don't worry, your life will be taken care of. The rule of the thumb is therefore Trikarna Shuddhi. If we want to benefit most from the three R's, that is reaction, reflection and resound.
And talking of purity, purity in action, because as we said, good is going to come back to you, bad is going to come back to you. So where is that full stop? Where do we lay that full stop?
Mm.
And you know, I was reminded of a quote which I read in a book. I don't know if you've heard of that book. It's the book of Mirdad.
I've heard of Mirdad,
right.
Yes.
Okay. In that, there's this wonderful quote, and I remember noting it down in my diary when I read it. Mm. You know, it says that when love is the only residue of all your accounts with the earth, then will the earth acquit you of her debt.
Wow.
When you love everything, you are attached to nothing. And it's so beautiful because pure love actually has no expectations. And I feel purity is that when you do goodness for the sake of goodness, not because goodness is going to come back to you or goodness is going to come back to you in many fold. You're being good because that is my nature to be good. That is what Swami expects of me.
And maybe going back to what we started with, maybe that is one of the reasons why we are not instantly rewarded or punished. Because I think the universal infinite wisdom out there does not want to encourage us to do good because we will get good.
Right.
Does not want us to abstain from doing bad because of fear that we will get bad. It wants us to evolve, understand this beautiful, you know, the beautiful functioning of the material universe in relation to the spiritual universe, and therefore do good because it's our nature to be good, and abstain from bad because actually there's nothing like bad. Abstain from bad because it's not our nature to be. And that is why we are not immediately rewarded, because you should not do good seeking the reward. And you are not immediately punished because I don't want to do this because if I do, I'll get it. Not like that. I don't want to do it because
you don't hurt a person not because tomorrow somebody is going to hurt you. You don't hurt a person because it's your nature not to hurt another
person. Exactly. And that is why we should be grateful to God or the infinite wisdom out there, to our beloved Swami, that there is this delay in the good and bad we do, so that our actions are not wrongly motivated.
And maybe we'll end with talking of reflection. There's a beautiful analogy which Swami gives. An equation which Swami creates. And Swami says, what is 3 minus 1? Swami asks. And the answer which all of us would give is 2. Swami said, no, 3 minus 1 in spirituality is 1. Swami says. And you know, and what Swami says is that when you stand in front of a mirror, you have the object, that is yourself. Then you have the mirror, that is the second entity. And then you have your reflection, that is the third. And Swami says, if you remove yourself or the mirror, what will be left is only one. The third entity automatically vanishes. That's why 3 minus 1 is 1. And I think that there lies another solution to this endless birth and death cycle. Right? Because when Swami says that when you see the world as separate from you, when you see that world is there, that separate. Is the mirror and I am there, and then you have the third reflection. But when the ego is removed, there's nothing like somebody is doing good, somebody is doing bad.
It's just one.
And I think to reach that state, you need to do a lot of good, of course. I think the catch is there.
And so, Swami says, if you want to kill your ego, there are two ways to do that. Killing the ego means removing the individuality that you possess. And for that, Swami gives two ways. He says, the chains of action and reaction bind you tight. The only way to escape is to grow huge so that you shatter the chains. And you grow huge by the formula of soham. I am that. Soham. I am that. I am the supreme. Or you grow so small that the chains can't bind you. They just fall off. And Swami says that is the method of dasoham, which says, I am nothing, O Lord. You are everything. I am but a small, insignificant, humble servant of yours. So either soham or dasoham is the way to sublimate the ego so that the mirror is removed. You know, I feel removing the mirror is soham and removing the individual is dasoham. So either way you do, you remove one of them and there only one exists and there is no problem of this.
And definitely for people like us, dasoham is definitely easier. An easier way, because we have a lot to love. We have somebody who we can most delightfully offer ourselves to, and that is the advantage we have. And Swami, we thank you for that. And not just this show, we offer our life at your feet, and we thank you for this opportunity. Dear listeners, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai.
And dear listeners, please do keep writing to us anything, just like Brother Naidu wrote from South Africa about this topic. It is so beautiful because we are also in search of ideas, we are also in search of topics, we are also in search of themes. We are not generators over here. So it is, as we say always, it's a global satsang with Swami at the head of the table and all of us here just sharing our experiences, discussing, and more we discuss, more and more we interact, the more enriching it is for all of us. And before we leave, we offer this humbly with all our love at the lotus feet of our most beloved, most beautiful, wonderful master, guru, guide, friend, teacher, mother, father, everything. And before we leave, you know, we would like to leave you with one exciting new Sai Blossom product. You know, the Nada Brahmam has been extremely popular,
very popular
and been successful. People have loved that. Not one, Prem. We are coming up with a double bonanza during this Aradhana Mahotsav, which falls on April 24th, mm-hmm. we will most probably have not one but two Nadabrahmams, Nadabrahmam 5
and 6,
and Nadabrahmam 6, both being released. Dear listeners, we hope that you have all the 4 copies to date now. If not, you can grab them soon. Here is a sample bhajan.
A sneak preview
from Nadabrahmam 6. Well, you will, once you hear it, you will realize that no one needs to speak anything about it. With that, we shall take leave. Hope to meet you at the same time next week for the next afternoon satsang. And on the other side of the bhajan, we'll have Brother Chandu Vijay taking you along with Love to Love.
Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, Allah. Awali Allah noor paya, Qudrat ke sab bande ik noor te sab jag upjiyara, kaun bhale ko mande, kaun bhale ko Ram Hare Hare Ram Guru
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 Hare Ram
Oh,
Let's go.